Hello again. This is Carol Bond returning again with the Decatur Herald and Review dated April 5th, 2016. We'll begin this portion of the newspaper reading with the obituaries. Willie Anderson Jr., 70, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away Sunday, March 27th at 3:36 a.m. at Decatur Memorial Hospital after a short illness. Memorial service 11 a.m. Saturday, April 9th at the Kingdom Hall of Jehovah's Witnesses, 876 West Pershing Road. Walker Funeral Service is in charge of the arrangements. Pamela E. Nayling, age 58, of Charleston, Illinois, went to be with her Lord and Savior on March 26, 2016. Visitation Thursday, April 7th, from 10 o'clock to noon at Adams Funeral Chapel in Charleston. Funeral services noon on Thursday at the Funeral Chapel. Burial, Dodge Grove Cemetery in Mattoon. Donations in her honor may be made to Eric Carey to be used for the benefit of her grandchildren. Gifts may be mailed to the Adams Funeral Chapel in Charleston. Mary Anna Peters Snoke, 94, of Cerro Gordo, passed away 8:07 a.m. on Sunday, April 3rd, at Hickory Point Christian Village. Services will be from 12 p.m. Wednesday, April 6th, at Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Cerro Gordo, with visitation from 10 a.m. until service time. Burial will be in Cerro Gordo Cemetery, Cerro Gordo, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, 501 Street, Jude Place, Memphis, Tennessee, 38105. And that concludes our reading of obituaries for today. We turn again to page 3, where we see a very interesting picture, and the headline is Wreath Pinwheels Stand for Child Abuse Prevention. Ceremony rallies support for unmet needs. The writer is Teresa Churchill. The more than 400 blue and silver pinwheels spinning on the north lawn of the Macon County Courts facility cannot do justice to the estimated 600 children in court because of abuse or neglect at any given time. Yet they stand as somber reminders of unmet need as the Macon County Court-appointed Special Advocates lit their Light of Hope wreath on the building's north wall Monday to kick off Child Abuse Prevention Month and Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Pam Burkhart, Executive Director of the Special Advocates, said 71 volunteers are representing the interests of about 150 children, and that the next round of training for more advocates begins this week. But she also talked about the work of other agencies, including the Macon County Child Advocacy Center's tradition of passing out stress relief kits to families during the month to prevent child abuse before it happens, and also the work of Growing Strong Sexual Assault Center and Dove Incorporated's Domestic Violence Program. Program Director Terry Ducey thanked the 20 people who attended the wreath lighting ceremony and told special advocates, quote, "We're right in there working beside you." Burkhart said people working together can make a difference, but so can one person. quote, "You'd be amazed at the impact you can have by something small you did for someone else," she said. "It's very important for each and every one of us to be a part of the change we want to see in our world." Court-appointed special advocates in Macon County started lighting a wreath for Child Abuse Prevention Month more than 15 years ago and added the pinwheels more than 5 years ago. Other activities marking the month include the Stratus Foods 2016 Casas for Casa Playhouse Raffle, with two playhouses on display in Hickory Point Mall until the drawing at 4 p.m. Saturday, April 30th. Two photographs with this article show Jennifer Garrett, Macon County CASA Advocate Supervisor, and Ted Payne, Macon County Court Appointed Special Advocates Board Member, working on a display of many, many blue and white pinwheels on the north side of the Macon County Courts facility. They are intended to encourage us to be aware of Child Abuse Prevention Month. They're simply these little pinwheel toys we used to have as kids. You would hold them up to your mouth and blow them. Seen all together, they're quite a remarkable view. On the same page, we find this article. Suspected DVD thieves arrested near Walmart. This was written by Tony Reed. Two alleged female serial DVD thieves who stole merchandise by the shopping cartful were arrested Friday by police after trying to walk out of a Decatur Walmart with 43 DVDs and other items worth more than $800. Sworn police statements say the Decatur women, aged 41 and 33, were jailed on preliminary charges of two counts of burglary. Walmart claims they've also been caught on surveillance video in several previous thefts. Police say an employee of the store at 4625 East Maryland Street had recognized the 33-year-old as a shoplifting suspect when she was spotted walking the aisles Friday morning. It said she was pushing a cart filled with 43 DVD movies and other items before stuffing the DVDs into a duffel bag. Police claim the woman told them she had later abandoned the goods and ran from the store because, quote, she had a feeling that she was being watched. The woman then fled with her accomplice, who was waiting outside, but police say they didn't get far before being taken into custody. Walmart says it had been watching out for the pair who had repeatedly hit its store. On March 1st, Walmart says the 33-year-old suspect was seen in the Maryland Street store while shoving a cart jammed with DVDs covered in a layer of boys' clothing. Store managers say they watched her roll the cart into the lawn and garden section and met with her accomplice, who was dragging a large black trash can. It's alleged all the items were dumped into the trash can and both women, quote, exited the business pulling the trash can while passing all points of sale, according to the sworn statements. On that occasion, they had allegedly abandoned the trash can and fled on foot after the store manager and the assistant manager tried to stop them. Under questioning after being arrested Friday, police claim the women told them they had gone to the store, quote, with the intent to commit a theft. Both women remained in the Macon County Jail on Monday night in lieu of posting a $30,000 bond each. If they make bail, they are ordered to stay away from Walmart. Let's see what our columnists are writing about today. This is Jean Phillips as Abby. Dear Abby, last week one of my associates asked me out for drinks. I have been working with him for the same length of time that I have been married. I know he's interested because he has been texting me about unrelated work things and is always flirting. I'm very much in love with my husband, but my coworker is very tempting. I'm worried about hurting my husband, but at the same time I'm excited about what this new man can offer me. Did I mention that he's the top lawyer of the firm? And she signs the letter Tempted in South Carolina. Here's your answer. Dear Tempted, let's pretend for a moment that the situation was reversed and this letter came from the husband you, quote, love very much. How would you feel if he acted on his temptation? When people marry, they promised each other certain things, chief among them fidelity. That alpha dog may want to have a fling with you, may be flattering, but it isn't necessarily a compliment. Take a step back and consider what could happen to your career at that firm and how you would feel if things don't go the way you'd like. Example, an attractive woman is hired and you are dropped like a hot potato. I'm guessing that you are not the first woman this has happened to in that office. Here's the next question. Dear Abby, my oldest daughter feels we should be available to watch or pick up our grandkids whenever she calls. I suffer from chronic pain and have good days and bad. I never know when I'll have a bad day. My daughter asks me to watch or have overnights with her children a month in advance. I don't know how I will be doing then, but if I cancel because I'm not feeling well, she gets bent out of shape. We have had fights about this, and I need someone else's advice. I raised my kids, and I love my grandkids, but sometimes I don't feel well enough to babysit or have an overnight. Are grandparents obligated to watch their grandkids whenever their parents need them? Signed, Feeling Used in Oregon. Dear Feeling Used, if you're feeling used, then you probably are. Your health concerns surely are no mystery to your daughter. Tell her you are glad to look after the grandchildren if you are up to it. But in case you aren't, she should have an alternate ready to step in should the need arise, because it may, and don't apologize for it. One more letter. Dear Abby, my daughter is being married soon, and we are getting ready to mail out the invitations. We have three couples who will not be married when the invitations are mailed, but will be by the wedding. Should we address their invitation using their single names or married names? Signed, Charlotte in Akron, Ohio. Dear Charlotte, not all women these days change their names to their husbands. Address the invitations using the names these couples are using now. At the wedding reception, the place cards can reflect any name changes that are necessary. Mary Hunt again offers useful advice. This time it has to do with removing stubborn stains. Dear Mary, I can't get the coffee stains out of my Mr. Coffee brew basket or the lid of the pot. It's white and plastic. I tried soaking it in bleach and cleanser, but neither worked. Signed, Margaret. Dear Margaret, if those stains are old and have already penetrated the plastic, they may be permanent now. That's one reason it's best to buy a black coffee maker. But before you surrender, try this. Moisten a Mr. Clean Magic Eraser with water and gently scrub the stains. These sponges are fantastic at removing all kinds of stains and are safe to use on nearly every surface. I can't guarantee this will restore the plastic to look like new, but it's your best option at this point. Mary also recommends the same product for removing hair dye from white cabinets. She explains that the erasers contained material commonly called melamine foam that is quite unique in removing stains. Another writer asks for the name of the gadget that Mary uses to cut up vegetables, onions, and other things, and Mary replies that it is the Vidalia Chop Wizard, and she says she loves it and she uses it for everything. On page 6, we find this article from Chicago that really has some useful information. Its headline is Medicaid Spending for Long-Term Care Rising. The federal government is pushing states to keep more low-income seniors out of nursing homes and instead enroll them in home and community-based programs. The shift comes as demand for long-term care is rising. By 2050, the number of people older than 85 is expected to triple to more than 18 million. These seniors tend to have the highest disability rate and the greatest need for long-term care. The tug of war between rising demand and controlling cost has advocates for seniors worrying about quality of care. Medicaid is one of the largest expenses for states, and it's a program they look to for savings when budgets are tight. Medicaid spending on long-term care was $146 billion in fiscal year 2013, including nearly $89 billion just for seniors. Advocates say programs for seniors often wind up on the chopping block. For example, Illinois is considering changes to its home and community-based program that would reduce funding by about $200 million. Quote, I think that oftentimes people are afraid of change, regardless of what that change is, said Andrea Maresca, Director of Federal Policy and Strategy at the National Association of Medicaid Directors. There's room to improve programs, she said, and states are also trying to make sure seniors don't lose access to services. Lauren Coleman of the Minnesota Department of Human Services said it took that state roughly 25 years to shift from institutional care to home and community-based program. The focus now is on helping older adults remain at home, delaying expensive nursing home care, and supporting family caregivers. To rein in costs, some states are changing payment systems from fee-for-service to managed care, which generally pays a per-person rate to providers who manage seniors' health and social services. We return now to A3 Briefs, where we have this report of an I-57 injury accident. A Mattoon driver was airlifted to a hospital after his pickup truck hit a semi-truck Sunday afternoon on Interstate 57, 6 miles north of Effingham. Skyler G. Switzer, 26, was taken to St. Anthony's Memorial Hospital in Effingham after the 3:56 p.m. crash, but later airlifted to Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A passenger in his truck, Kyla R. Schreier, 25, of Neoga, was not listed as being injured. Police allege Switzer braked hard as he attempted to maneuver around state police cruisers pulled over behind a car and a tow truck. Police say a semi-truck driven by Elvedin Semardizic, 36, of Garland, Texas, had no chance to avoid Switzer's truck and crashed into the back of it. Switzer was ticketed for standing, stopping, parking on roadway, and violation of minimum speed restriction. There's also a small article concerning a synthetic pot arrest. A Decatur woman is facing multiple charges after police say they pulled her over for driving while under the influence of drugs that included a packet of Scooby Snacks, a form of synthetic cannabis. The 42-year-old suspect was stopped about 3 a.m. Friday as she headed east on El Dorado Street in a van with no headlights. Sworn statements say the patrol officer searched the vehicle and discovered the Scooby Snacks packet, two hypodermic needles, and two glass pipes used to smoke drugs. The driver allegedly failed field sobriety test. She was jailed on preliminary charges of possession of a controlled substance, possession of drug paraphernalia, and aggravated driving under the influence. The next headline, theft from bra. A Decatur man choked his ex-girlfriend Saturday morning while trying to snatch a phone and money she had stashed in her bra, according to police. Sworn statements say the 27-year-old suspect injured the victim, also age 27, when he ripped her shirt off, scratching her arm. It's alleged he then stole three cable boxes and a, quote, internet box from her home, together valued at $500. He was caught quickly after a traffic stop by patrol officers and jailed on preliminary charges of home invasion, domestic battery, and theft. Millikan University offers this. Millikan University, in conjunction with Richland Community College, the Decatur School District, and Caring Black Men, will host a panel discussion on race relations at 6 p.m. Thursday, April 7th at Eisenhower High School. The panel will consist of Jeffrey Perkins, president of Caring Black Men, Molly Berry, director of inclusion and student engagement at Millikan, Rochelle Clark, director of student services for Decatur Public Schools, and Alex Berry, coordinator of student engagement at Richland. The theme is A Conversation on Race 2016, an ongoing honest dialogue. And you can find out more by contacting Millikan's Office of Inclusion and Engagement. We turn now to the opinions page, where we find an editorial by the editorial board. And the headline is, Dear Legislators, Welcome Back. Now Do Your Jobs. And it's in the form of an open letter. Dear General Assembly members, welcome back from your spring break. We hope you are well rested, even though your schedule before the two-week break wasn't that tough. You probably won't be surprised, but while you were gone, the budget issue did not solve itself. It got worse. Chicago State University has said it doesn't have enough money to make payroll through month's end. Other universities have laid off staff and made other cutbacks. We're not against some cuts in higher education. Those folks have overspent for years. But we suspect that smaller institutions are suffering for the overspending at the bigger schools. Social service agencies are also struggling, and some have been forced to cut back or close. More broadly, the lack of a state budget continues to hamper the state's economy. Unemployment rates recently increased across the state. Some of that is due to more people seeking jobs, which is overall a good thing. But a lack of jobs is also an issue, and some of that is attributable to uncertainty over the state budget. In addition, there are many suppliers to the state that haven't been paid in a long, long time. That makes it difficult for those companies to pay their bills, let alone consider expanding or taking on new employees. Just like the creation of a new job has a ripple effect, the lack of a state budget is rippling throughout the state's economy. Your lack of action is having a negative impact on the state and the people you represent. We're hopeful, but doubtful, that you spent some time reflecting on your role in this mess during the last 2 weeks. We're also hopeful, but even more doubtful, that some of you have considered a solution. Everyone knows that the budget impasse will have to be solved with a mixture of spending reductions and revenue increases. Those actions won't be easy, but they'll be necessary. Taxpayers won't like it, but they'll have to accept that fact. The sticking point, as we all know, is Governor Bruce Rauner's, quote, turnaround agenda, unquote. Frankly, two of the issues are no-brainers. You should allow there to be votes on constitutional amendments on term limits and redrawing the state's political maps. Defending the status quo? You've got to be kidding. But the state also needs some sort of workers' compensation reform, and local governmental units need more flexibility in dealing with unions. While you're at it, also make it easier for local government units to consolidate or be eliminated. We're convinced that the path to saving taxpayers real money is by reducing the overall size of government in Illinois. Mostly, however, we urge you to do your jobs and legislate. Most of you are simply too happy letting House Speaker Michael Madigan, Senate President John Cullerton, and Rauner play politics with our state's economy. In simple terms, you've had your vacation. Now, do your job. And it's signed, sincerely, Illinois Taxpayers. On page 8, we find a few interesting items. These items happened on this date in history. In 1933, President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed an executive order creating the Civilian Conservation Corps. And on this date in 1955, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill resigned his office for health reasons, and Democrat Richard J. Daley was first elected mayor of Chicago. And on this date in 1964, Army General Douglas MacArthur died in Washington, D.C. at age 84. The thought for the day was written by Lord Acton, British historian, in a letter written on this date in 1887. It reads as follows: power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. A photograph shows in 1987, the Powers Jarvis Mansion, as it towers over a lawn filled with collectibles, and people are browsing through the items during the James and Pat Dorsey closing out sale. This has been Carol Bond with the April 5th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. I look forward to reading with you again next week.